U.S. aid was immediately resumed once Uganda withdrew its troops from the Congo. Uganda is the only East African country and one of only eight in Africa that openly supported the U.S. war in Iraq. During a visit to the U.S. last June, President Museveni signed Article 98 of the Rome Statute, under which it would not hand over American soldiers accused of war crimes for trial in the International Criminal Court. For Free Speech Radio News, this is Joshua Chalimpa reporting from Kampala, Uganda.
This is Free Speech Radio News. I'm Deepa Fernandez.
3 minutes after six, guys. Yeah, I think you might need a watch or something. Okay, we're starting 3 minutes late, but it's time once again for Off the Wall.
Thank you.
Okay, I guess that's about enough of the theme. Although it is good to hear it occasionally, all the way through. But it still has another 6.5 minutes left to go, so we just don't have the time. 8 minutes after 6 o'clock, you're listening to Off the Wall, the weekly talk show that comes your way every Tuesday night from 6 to 7 here on WUSB in Stony Brook. Well, hopefully there will be some people soon in the tally room so we can raise some funds, which is what we're in the middle of here at WUSB. So we're going to hold off on that for the moment and focus on what's going on in the world, and hopefully that'll cheer people up enough so that they feel like doing whatever they can to make sure more news like this comes your way. And who knows, maybe we'll take some phone calls later too if we have the opportunity. And your letters are always welcome. Off the Wall. Actually, email address otw@2600.com. Where do we begin? Well, gosh, went on a bit of a rant last week about the whole FCC thing. Kind of like to continue with that. There's a lot to talk about, a lot of weird stuff going on, a lot of fear in the air, literally. And of course, that affects what you hear as listeners on all different radio stations, all different TV stations. Like last night, for instance. Anybody catch Janet Jackson on David Letterman? Jesus. She said Jesus as an exclamation, and they bleeped it. They bleeped it. They bleeped her saying Jesus. Jesus, Jesus, Jesus. I'll say it all hour. It's not an obscenity. it's not even an indecency. At least not in this culture. These people are falling over themselves, self-censoring, to get the FCC off their backs and to, appear as if they're as family-friendly as possible. So, the slightest look is something that will cause them to trip over themselves, to block it out so you won't see anything negative or think that there might be something negative where there isn't anything negative in the first place, except maybe what is in your head. So, the fear-mongering continues, and it affects, I think, just about all the broadcasters in the United States. All the broadcasters in the rest of the world are laughing, wondering why we make such a big deal out of these things. And in the end, it's the public that's shortchanged, because everything is sanitized, everything is wiped clean for us, and we get a distorted view of what the world is actually like. It's like watching Reservoir Dogs on Channel 11, which I did once, and it was unbelievable. They made up words. They made up all kinds of fake cuss words that they could use. Even though you knew exactly what it was they were talking about, they couldn't say that. They could only make something that sounded like it so that nobody would be offended. But, it doesn't make any sense to me. If you think inside your head when they're saying this, the real world, the real word that they're not using, it's there, right? If you use a fake word that sounds like the real word, then you are thinking of the real one. Makes sense to me. I don't know what's going through the minds of these people. But panic is definitely one of the top three categories. All right. Let's take a look at the news and see what else comes our way. President Bush says it will help give the American public a complete picture of the time leading up to 9/11. Yes, that's right. They're reversing policy. We talked about this a little bit last week. Condoleezza Rice not testifying in front of the 9/11 commission. Not testifying publicly, that is. She didn't want to set a bad precedent. Testifying publicly and explaining yourself is a bad thing to do in the Bush administration. Well, that led to quite a bit of outrage, led by off-the-wall listeners and spreading throughout the nation. And it was starting to look really bad for the Bush administration, so it wasn't too much of a reach to predict that they would buckle on this, and that is exactly what happened today. Bush is now allowing his national security advisor to testify publicly before the commission investigating the attacks, and she will be under oath. So no lying, Condoleezza. We want the truth this time. Bush had been holding firm against allowing the testimony from Condoleezza Rice, citing executive privilege. But he said today in the White House briefing room that the terror threat demands the government's full attention. Not sure what that means exactly, how it pertains to this. While agreeing to let her testify, Bush demanded that the commission agree that Rice's appearance won't set any precedents for future investigations. How can you make such a stipulation? You know, it depends on what you, Mr. President, do and what your administration does. That's what sets the precedents. He says allowing a president and his advisors to have private discussions is an important principle. I don't know. That doesn't seem to happen in England, does it? I see Tony Blair in front of all kinds of public hearings all the time, and he does pretty good. You know, he defends himself. I don't agree with what he says, but he defends himself, and he seems to know what he's talking about. I guess when you don't know what you're talking about, maybe that's when you get a little nervous about things like that, because, you know, you can't hide behind all kinds of vagueness. Well, anyway, Bush and Vice President Cheney have also agreed to meet with the commission in private. Wouldn't you just love to see them in public, like we saw Clark last week, you know? Like we saw Powell last week, like we saw Rumsfeld. I mean, do you think Bush can handle it? Do you think he can stand up to these guys and answer their questions? Look, if you're a Bush supporter, the answer has to be yes, of course he can handle it. So then why not? And if you're a Bush detractor, you know he can handle it. So again, why not? Let the fun begin. But our Congress is too spineless to ever actually push something like that through. So don't set your calendar to see Bush in front of a congressional committee or any committee investigating 9/11 or anything where he has to answer questions that aren't very easy. In fact, we'll be lucky if we get a couple of debates out of him. And what's with the polls going up after all of this? After seeing the kind of avoidance of the issues, the polls are actually going up for Bush. I mean, come on. The economy's in a shambles. People are finding all kinds of inconsistencies in stories. His own advisors are coming out against him and writing books and showing how we were all lied to with the whole Iraq thing. And the popularity goes up? I don't know. Maybe we just like people that mislead and don't tell the truth and are incompetent. Yeah, it is kind of fun, I guess. You never know what's going to happen next. I remember the Reagan years. But I just don't believe it, you know? I mean, they put out these polls. I don't know. I don't know how true they can possibly be. I guess we'll, you know, we'll find out. Anyway, continuing with this story, the GOP chair of the Federal 9/11 Commission is welcoming the White House decision on Condoleezza Rice. Former New Jersey Governor Thomas Kane says the White House shouldn't worry that it will set any precedents. He says the integrity of the separation of powers will not be violated. The decision for Rice to testify comes on the heels of claims made by former White House counterterrorism chief Richard Clark. He says the Bush administration was too slow in responding to al-Qaeda threats. No date has yet been set for Rice to publicly address the commission, but you can bet my VCR will be going. You know, last week, they really upset me last week because, you know, the first day of testimony took place, and then the second day of testimony, I left the house. I set my VCR to record C-SPAN, and I left the house, and what do you know? They broadcast the second day of hearing. Instead of on C-SPAN like they did the first day, they broadcast the second day on C-SPAN 3. I mean, this is the one with Richard Clark, the most interesting part of the whole thing. They put it on C-SPAN 3, which is a channel I don't even get. You know, I get shop at home, I get, you know, shop in the car, I get all kinds of crazy religious channels and God knows, things I've never seen in my life, things I never want to see. But I don't get C-SPAN 3. In fact, many of us don't even know there is a C-SPAN 3. Here in Brookhaven, they're fighting for C-SPAN 2 on Sundays because it gets preempted by the Italians. There's a whole big controversy about that, but It's great. It's great when they can decide, when the cable companies and the satellite companies can decide what it is that you get to see. And then they run the commercials that say, sign up for the Starz Super PAC, when you don't have the ability to do that. Only the cable provider, only the satellite provider can do that for you, for all their customers. They can have 15 different channels that are basically the same thing, but it's called, you know, the Super PAC. But they advertise it as if the consumer can go and select these. They can't. I'll never understand this. Anyway, how did I get off onto that? I don't know. It was on C-SPAN 3, okay? Yeah. It was a real pain. I got to see it in the end, but didn't appreciate that very much. Anyway, continuing with this story, which is a big story. It really is. Former Democratic Congressman Tim Romer, is that how you pronounce that? I think it is, says the, I'll tell you what kind of congressman he was, I never even heard of him before, says the National Security Advisor has to be asked if the Bush administration made fighting terror an urgent priority. Well, what do you think she's going to say? Of course she's going to say yes. He says the commission needs to know how quickly the administration made the decision to go after terrorists. As quickly as is humanly possible, she will say. I mean, these are, you know, real softball questions here. Hopefully they'll come up with something a little bit more substantial. Romer, I really hope I'm saying this right. Romer? I don't know. The former Democratic congressman, I've never heard of before, and I don't even know where he's from. They don't even say that. Maybe they don't know. He says Rice will have to address charges made by former White House counter-terror aide Richard Clark that the administration was slow to embrace a fight against terrorism. He says the questions for Rice will be significant and extremely important. And it's great how the White House is accusing Clark of contradicting himself under oath. You know, he said one thing when he was an advisor, and now he's saying something else, and both times he was under oath. But they don't want to release the full transcript of what he said the first time. They just want to accuse him of this, but they want to keep it secret. That's the theme of the administration, is to keep things secret and just make accusations that stick based on no evidence at all. I mean, you know, why didn't I ever think of that? Okay, and you may notice gas prices are going up. You notice that? I'm glad. I really am. I'm glad. You know, when they're $3 a gallon, I will dance a jig in a gas station of my choice, because it's about time. You know, these tanks that are on the street right now, they make things unsafe for everybody. You can't see past them when you're driving. If they hit you, it really hurts a lot. They don't know how to drive these things because they're just too damn big. So they're always flipping over and knocking into things, taking up too much of the road. They don't know where to keep their vehicle in between the lines. But most importantly, those of us who drive actual cars are being intimidated by these people who tailgate and basically just drive unsafely. But the one thing that these mammoth vehicles do not have is the ability to save gasoline. So they get like 10 miles to the gallon or 15 to the gallon. Or, you know, I think anything under 30 is really criminal with the state of the world today. We should be able to do better than that. And there's no need to be driving tanks down the street. There's no need for anyone to have a Hummer. There really is. I mean, yeah, if you want a Hummer, fine. Have a Hummer. But people are buying these things for their families. It doesn't make any sense. It really doesn't. You don't need something that huge. Okay, this is not some space colony where a shipment of goods comes in once every 6 months. You know, it's a suburbia. If it snows a couple of inches and you get over it in a couple of days. It's not the wilderness. You don't need off-road vehicles. You know what? If you want an off-road vehicle, keep it off the road. That's what I say. Leave the road for the vehicles that are meant to drive on roads. So, yeah, I'll be very happy, extremely delighted when gas is $3 a gallon, because these folks will be complaining. These folks will be suffering. These folks maybe won't be driving as much. And the people who get 40, 50, maybe even 60 miles to the gallon, you'll see them a lot more. And they drive better. They really do. You know, there's always idiots, but for the most part, I think they drive a lot better. And it's just not as wasteful. And maybe, you know, maybe we will actually see some of those smart cars driving around once people realize that it's not going to go down. That's a scarce commodity. I have a URL, actually, somebody sent in that is great. It's a story all about driving the smart car across the United States. Someone actually did this. They actually drove the smart car all the way across the United States. And they kept a journal. They kept a log. And it's really kind of cool. It tells you things about the smart car. It tells you things about driving across the United States, which I've done a few times. And noticed it every time, how friendly people are, how much more open-minded than you might believe people are in this country. So if you go to this URL, www.carmagazine.co.uk, that's right, it's in the United Kingdom, /NAV page equals car.stories.detail& you know, the little and sign above the 7, I think, story ID, and the I is capital, not sure if that makes a difference there, equals 582346. And you know, maybe somebody can convert that into tinyurl.com or something, and we'll post a better URL next week. But basically, it's the story of someone driving the smart car across the country and the kinds of reactions that it got. And it says a lot of interesting things about SUVs as well. And as long as we're writing down URLs, someone else sent this one in, which I think is really interesting, scary, sad, but fascinating at the same time. It's about a motorcyclist's journey through Chernobyl. Yeah, going around touring the area and seeing just what exactly it looks like now. And I'll tell you, it's a real eye-opener. This place is completely abandoned. And it just looks like people ran out and didn't look back. And at the very least, it'll be hundreds of years before that place can be populated again. At the very least. It could be thousands. Could be tens of thousands of years. I mean, can you imagine the audacity of mankind to actually do something like that to the land? It's sickening. It really is. And all those people who supported nuclear power and said, well, you know, Shoreham isn't going to be a big deal. Jamesport isn't going to be a big deal. Well, take a look at that. Yeah, it was run badly. It wasn't a safe design. But look at what can happen when things get out of control. And things can get out of control. Almost happened in Harrisburg. So thank God it was able to be stopped here on Long Island. But it makes you really wonder. Anyway, the URL to take the motorcycle trip or just read the journal and see some of the pictures through Chernobyl, www.angelfire.com/extreme4, that's the number 4, not spelled out, /kidofspeed, and that's spelled KIDDOFSPEED. And put a slash in there, too. Sometimes it makes a difference. This person writes into us. Yeah, I'm reading listener mail now. I just kind of segued into that, if that's okay. I have been a 2600 since I was a kid. It's weird how people just kind of turn things into language. You know, we put out this magazine called 2600, and now people refer to themselves as 2600s. And of course, we have the meetings. In fact, there's a meeting coming up this Friday, and that's referred to as the 2600. Will you be at 2600 this week? And of course, the magazine also is a noun known as the new 2600. And people identify themselves sometimes. And I have to say, you know, people walk around. Oh, my God, look at that. I see the face of Jim Wiener in the other room. I can't believe it. Jim Wiener, is that really you? Wait a minute. Hold on a second. Can I do this? Can I put the microphones on? Jim, scream as loud as you can. No, I hear feedback. I don't hear anything else. Hold on. I'm going to turn this on now. And where do I bring that up? Hold on. I can do this.
Is this okay?
Oh, there he is. I got him.
Hello.
Jim Wiener, how are you?
Good, how are you?
How can you hear me? You don't have headphones on.
I've got the monitor speaker on in here.
Ah, very nice.
But fortunately, it's not I guess it's not feeding back now.
Uh-huh. Jim, I have a message. If you could pass this on to the other people in the tally room. Would you do that for me, please?
Sure.
Where are you people? Can you say that to the people who are not sitting there? Because I thought there were going to be people here tonight.
Well,
I mean, should I take phone calls and have you?
Well, actually, I mean, I hate to say it.
Go ahead, Jim. Go ahead. I'm ready.
And maybe we should have discussed this before the mic went on, but unfortunately, due to some matters that I have to attend to, I'm really up here for a brief period of time to take care of some radiothon business, but I specifically can't.
Just to mock me to my face. That's what you really came up here for.
Hardly. No, not to mock you.
I have a tradition to uphold, you know. No. I mean, you know, that's what traditionally over the years you've always come up here to mock me, and
certainly
why
not.
Should that stop?
I never mock you to your face, only behind your back. That's the tradition
that we
like to maintain.
Very, very nice.
That each
there.
Of us mocks the other behind.
Well, that's perfectly okay,
back,
Jim.
Yes.
But maybe other people are on their way up, and we still have some time. And if not, we always have next week, where we have a whole week to guilt people into coming up here. I do have some extra premiums that I registered. I'm not sure if you have them yet. But if you do, maybe you could enter those into the computer. If not, we'll just deal with it later.
Very good.
How have you been, Jim?
Oh, good, good. How have you been?
I've been great. I've been really, you know, having fun, causing trouble everywhere I go, as always. And I don't know, listening to old Brain Damages. In fact, I'm still encoding 1989.
Wow.
And I hear your voice many times.
Wow.
And as much of a mischief maker then as you are now.
Oh, thank you.
It's something to hear, a bit of history.
I've even been trying. I appreciate that very much, and I always enjoyed that program. And speaking of the mischief that I make, I've been considering possibly trademarking some of it or service marking some of it, but I'm not sure if it would apply.
Trademarking mischief?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know, you are one of the front runners in that
mischief,
department.
But I'm sorry, I was one of the what?
Front runners. You know, you pretty much define the term.
Thank you.
Yeah. If you see something out there that doesn't belong, you know, that kind of has been misplaced or something that you think has is just a form of mischief making, Jim is probably responsible for it in one way or another.
Thank you.
So are we doing okay as far as marathon goes?
Let's see.
As Jim runs over to the computer and he's running back.
Doesn't look too bad, actually.
Okay, doesn't look too bad. That's always good to know. That's kind of the theme here at USB, trying not to look too bad.
Yeah, it looks pretty good. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else on your mind, Jim?
Not really, no. I'm sorry. I have to go and take care of some off-air business here.
Off-air business.
Yeah, but...
Got your hands in many pots.
But, well...
It's always been the case, Jim. I mean, you know, we've always, always been many things going on this campus. Nothing happens that you don't know about.
No, I don't know about that. That's kind of you to say, but I don't know about that.
Uh-huh. It certainly has changed quite a bit, though, hasn't it?
The campus, years. Yes.
Yeah, it almost looks nice now. I don't like it. I really don't.
Oh, really?
It looks too. The grass is manicured and, you know.
Well, you know.
There's little mud.
I understand, but, you know, it's interesting. I'm very fortunate that I have enjoyed the look of the campus over the last, let's say, approximately 35 years, all of the different phases that it's gone through, there's been something about it that's appealed to
me. It's like evolution in a way. You know, you had the primeval stage, primordial rather, and all kinds of, you know, the mud. There was the mud. You know, there were the buildings that came up, the buildings that came down, all from the same buildings. And I think over the last 10 or so years, it's just kind of evolved into... I don't know, something that's a little too pristine looking in some ways. Is that, I think we lost our soul somewhere along the way.
Well, I don't know. I gotta say, I mean, it's a matter of personal taste, and I understand what you mean, but I feel that in a way, since it's a whole different period, a whole large period of time has passed, that maybe it's not so much losing the soul, but that the soul has changed, like as you were saying, evolved. That it was one kind of soul years ago, and now it's a different kind of soul. It's just a different look, a different sense as time has gone on. But in fact, what I feel also is interesting is that my personal reaction to the campus, as I say, I've liked something about it each of the last 35 years, no matter how it's changed. But one thing that's been very interesting to me, which I think is good, is that many of the campus's reactions to me,
uh-huh,
or people on the campus, has been rather consistent. I mean, it's really, it's there's something reassuring about the consistency. I can, let's say, be driving in my car onto campus or walking on campus, and we'll go by and stop and say hello to somebody. And
you still
almost,
get that look, right?
Pardon?
You still,
yeah, I was going to say, almost that look, almost without variation, it's heartwarming and reassuring to always see a look and hear someone say, please, please move on.
Yeah, back off.
Yeah. I mean, you know, not that I'm attacking anybody, but just the people, the sense that people have about me, or understand.
But Jim, is that so much a campus thing or more of an instinct that, that human beings have?
Actually, to be honest with you, you know, now that you mention it, it's not just a campus thing. You know, so I'm not casting aspersions on the campus. It's understandable because, you know, as I think about it and as you mention it, no matter where I go, people generally will say to me, please, go away.
Go to Bhutan. And that's understandable. Go to the country of Bhutan, which is in the Himalayas, and walk around there and see if the same thing happens. And I would bet that it would, and
actually,
that would pretty much tell you.
You're very, very perceptive because I never went there.
Uh-huh. That's why I picked it.
But the other day, I got a call from someone in Bhutan and said, please don't ever come here.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I had nothing to do with that.
Yeah. I believe you.
The only person in Bhutan I knew was a screaming operator there.
Really?
I don't know if you remember her from Brain Damage.
Sure.
Yeah, well, I don't think she even screams anymore, or is maybe she's not even an opera. I don't know. I don't know. I haven't been following up on it.
Perhaps she's been automated. Maybe it's an automated scream now.
But that's the only person I ever had any contact with over there. Now, she may have got wind of you somehow and spread the word around there.
Possibly
I don't know.
So.
It's entirely likely.
Possibly so.
Yeah. But, okay, well, regardless.
Great talking to you, then. I'm sorry to cut it short. I've got to run over and do something.
Yes, and I'm keeping you from doing
but
that.
But no, that's okay. I'm just saying, really very nice to join you and to speak with you.
But you're looking well through the window here.
You too.
I can't actually, I mean, we're separated by bulletproof glass, I guess, out of necessity.
Yeah.
But it's good occasionally to run into you here.
Same here.
Yes, and I miss those days, those old days.
Me
where
too.
You would be here every 3 weeks.
Me too, absolutely.
Yeah, but soon you'll be able to hear 1989 on the net put that on there. And then there's only one more year to go, 1988, and then we're finished with Brain Damage.
Terrific.
Yeah, moving in backwards order. So
terrific.
It gets weirder every year.
Yeah.
Back then, there was still a Soviet Union. Germany was about to unify, and it's something to just see the history unfold. Anyway, again, thanks, Jim, and we'll see you again soon. Where was I before Jim came in here and distracted me? I was reading listener mail. That's what I was doing, and I was talking about. Don't worry, Jim, your microphone is off. So yeah, I could see a look of concern there. I'm even taking everything off the board here, turning the mixer off, and disconnecting everything so we don't accidentally hear your voice again. So this person says, I have been a 2600 since I was a kid. And fine, okay. 2600 is now a way to describe a person. Looking a bit 2600-ish today. Yeah. Anyway, I've just started tuning into Off the Wall. You know, one day we're going to get mail from people saying, I've been listening to Off the Wall since I was a kid. And unless, you know, someone has grown up since last year, that's not possible to say right now. But but we'll see. We'll see what happens. Anyway, I ran a pirate radio station in the Bay Area of California for 2 years. I am now in Boston. I need advice from Emmanuel Goldstein. Oh, pretty personal here. Is there movement on the EAT Coast? I assume you mean East Coast, not EAT Coast. Yeah, there's a lot of overweight people here, I know, but there's no need to be nasty about it. Can I make a difference? Is it worth the risk? Please relay the... Who am I relaying the message to? Okay, I'll relay it to myself and then broadcast it over the air. Signed, Skaterpunk. Well, Skaterpunk, thank you very much for your kind words. I think there were kind words in there, weren't there? Actually, you know what? I didn't see any kind words, just a lot of facts. Oh, well. I'm going to assume there were kind intentions behind your words. How about that? And thanks for writing, okay? Yes, it's always worth the risk, whatever it is you're trying to do, if you believe in it. And as far as pirate radio, you know, pirate radio is something that I have a big problem just calling it pirate radio, because I think the true pirates are the people who take over the entire bandwidth, the entire broadcast range with the same old crap everywhere you look. You know, entities like Clear Channel. And then, of course, they're the first to buckle to the whims of the FCC, because they don't really care about the speech aspects. They care about the business aspects, and that's what they want to hold on to. So, yeah, you know, I consider them to be the pirates, not the people that broadcast community radio to their community. You know, playing local music or just having local talk. And you can't do that. You can't just go out and do that. They make it very difficult for you. So, you know, the only thing that most people have access to are stations like this one. And stations like this one are rapidly disappearing. We're not disappearing. Better not disappear. I'll have no place to go on Tuesday nights. But if you look across the United States, you'll see that many stations like this, many community radio stations, have been overrun by National Public Radio. Not to demonize them too much, but they do have a nasty habit of dividing and conquering without so much dividing. And just going through the spectrum here on Long Island, I can get maybe 8 or 10 different frequencies that broadcast the same thing. That's NPR. And more than a couple of those are stations that used to be run by college students, as this one still is. And I'll tell you, it's one of the greatest things you can ever hope for is to go to a university where you have a station like this, where you can plunge in and get as involved as you want. Play different kinds of music, do interviews, meet people, be creative. Yeah, you know, it's not enough just to have the station, but you have to do something with it. And here at USB, we've always had a tradition of being as creative as possible, of not restricting what people do, not having a playlist telling people, you must play this, you must play that, don't play this. Or only do music, don't talk. Well, I'm talking now, so obviously that's not true. But like I said, very few stations like this exist. So that leaves pirate radio for a lot of people. And of course, even with broadcasting without a license, which is certainly possible to do, the spectrum is so full that it's almost impossible to do it. It's almost impossible to even find a frequency that you can broadcast on without stepping on a station that's in your backyard. So it's difficult. But if you can find a way without interfering, it could be a good thing. And, you know, here in this area, not to give people instructions on how to do this, but just to present some facts, there are frequencies below the FM spectrum that everybody is able to get, unless you have a radio from 1956 or something. If you look at the FM spectrum, don't do it now because you're listening to me, all right? Don't tune the dial until I finish, all right? Because you won't hear what I'm saying if you do that. 88.1 is the first station on the FM dial, technically. But if you move downwards a bit, you'll see that you can also get 87.9, 87.7, and 87.5. And you may ask yourself, what in the world are these stations? There's never anything on those stations, those frequencies. Well, that actually is reserved for Channel 6, if you have a Channel 6. If you go down to Philadelphia, go up to Rhode Island or something, you'll hear audio. And I think it's 87.5. I'm not sure exactly what the frequency is. And I don't even know if that bleeds over onto 87.7 or 87.9. So those bits of the spectrum are already there, and in places like this where we don't have a Channel 6, they're unused. They're unused. And in fact, you can travel into New York City and you will hear stations on those frequencies, and they're powerful. They really are pretty strong. You can hear them throughout almost the entire area. And they run out of somebody's house. So yeah, it's possible. It certainly is possible. But again, understand that there is risk involved in this kind of a thing. So know what those risks are, and know how much you believe in what you're doing. And if you are going to do something like this, at least make it different. Nothing's worse than hearing a pirate radio station that's trying to be like a commercial radio station. And again, I'm using the term as it's defined in the mass media, which, of course, has a vested interest in defining it that way. Okay, and someone else wrote in, too, and I want to thank all the people who wrote in with this information. We talked about the Iraq Uncensored story documentary that aired on CBC. It aired one final time last week, and I guess most of you weren't able to see it because either you're not in Canada or you don't get Canadian TV. Well, I'm not in Canada, but I do get Canadian TV, so I'm able to see things like this. And it's something that couldn't air in this country, well, because of the political storm it would cause, I guess. Basically saying how the media was completely led around by the nose and how we weren't given the full story. But also because they use some salty language, and you just can't have that. I don't know if they said Jesus, but they said other things. The URL, if you want to actually see this, it's going to look like garbage because it's a little tiny window that will open up on your browser. And I think you have to have real one in order for this to work. But try it, you know, see what you can do. The whole documentary is online, and the URL is as follows. www.informationclearinghouse, that's one word, don't ask me how to spell it, .info, that's right, they're using the top-level domain of .info, God bless them, / you thought it was finished, no, / article 5280, O as in zero, .htm, not HTML, .htm, got it? Okay. Watch it and report back next week. There will be questions. Okay, what else is going on here? All kinds of things, as always. This should pretty much tell you the state of the Homeland Security. A self-described psychic's tip that a bomb might be on a plane prompted a search with bomb-sniffing dogs that turned up nothing suspicious but forced the cancellation of the flight. I couldn't make this up. I really couldn't. American Airlines Flight 1304 at Southwest Florida International Airport was canceled on Friday because some crew members had exceeded their work hours by the time the search was finished. Okay, fine, but that doesn't explain why this happened in the first place. The purported psychic's call was unusual, conceded Doug Perkins, local administrator for the Federal Transportation Security Administration, the TSA. You may see them in airports. And this is what these guys listen to, psychics. And he says, "In these times, we can't ignore anything. We want to take the appropriate measures." So, okay, the appropriate measures now, according to the Bush administration and their Transportation Security Administration, is to listen to psychics. I guess it makes sense, you know, Nancy Reagan was big into that. Well, a psychic says something and all of a sudden it's treated as credible evidence. Unbelievable. None of the 128 passengers had boarded yet for the flight to Dallas when the search was ordered. TSA officials wouldn't say who the call came from or who received it. They're covering their asses. The passengers were placed on later flight. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine having your trip completely disrupted because some psychic says that you're in danger? And the federal government believes it? Yeah, they believed it. They evacuated the area. They canceled the plane. They brought the bomb-sniffing dogs on there. Probably had better things to do. On the word of a psychic. I mean, you know, I'm sure there are people in there that believe in psychosis, whatever it is you call that field, but it's not a proven science. All right, next thing you know, we're going to be looking at the stars and saying what, you know, astrology is prophesizing for, you know, for American Airlines today. Do you really want things to be running that way? And if they're listening to psychics, what else are they listening to? What other kinds of tips are they taking seriously? Psychics, good God. Okay, let's go into the world of fundamentalism, because it's always so much fun. The county that was the site of the Scopes monkey trial over the teaching of evolution on Thursday did something really nice. They reversed their call to ban homosexuals. Yeah. Rhea County, this is in Tennessee, by the way, Rhea County commissioners took about 3 minutes to retreat from a request to amend state law so the county could charge homosexuals with crimes against nature. The Tuesday measure passed 8-0. County Attorney Gary Fritz said the initial vote triggered a wildfire of reaction. "I've never seen nothing like this," he said on Thursday. Oh, I gotta love this place sometimes. I really do. But anyway, Fritz said it was all a misunderstanding. A misunderstanding, that's all it was. Okay, here's the story. They wanted to send a message to our state representative and senator that Rhea County supports the ban on same-sex marriage. Same-sex marriage is what it was all about. It was to stop people from coming here and getting married and living in Rhea County. Not that the issue of banning homosexuals didn't arise. I'm not saying it wasn't discussed, Fritz said. Sometimes you had 5 or 6 people talking. Fritz said he advised the commissioners they cannot ban homosexuals or make them subject to criminal charges. He also said they couldn't get rid of all the Mexicans. The U.S. Supreme Court in 2003 struck down Texas's... is that how you say it? Texas's? Yeah. The sodomy laws of Texas as a violation of adults' privacy. Fritz said he doesn't believe the issue will come up again. "I think they got all the publicity they need about it," he said. All of the commissioners declined to comment on Thursday. Social worker Esther Jackson, one of 300 people who attended Thursday's meeting, held a sign reading, "Breed love, not hate." "It's just ignorance is all," she said of Tuesday's vote. But 12-year-old Caitlin Kinney, attending the meeting with her mother, said she supported the commissioner's initial vote. "I think they should go further. Try to see if they can ban them," she said. "It's not a Christian thing." Out of the mouth of babes. Mouths of babes, yes. The politically conservative county holds an annual festival commemorating the 1925 trial at which high school teacher John T. Scopes was convicted of teaching evolution. The verdict was reversed on a technicality, and the trial became the subject of the play and movie Inherit the Wind. And I kind of think this is not as unusual as you might think. Look around. See what people around you are saying and thinking. You'll find that kind of attitude is there. It might be hidden a little bit because it's a little inconvenient at the moment. But give people the opportunity, and they certainly will... express themselves. It's kind of like, you know, those offensive people in the early 80s came out of the whole Reagan era. You know, people were kind of crude and selfish, greedy. And it was sort of a joke at first, you know? It was kind of, yeah, look how offensive I can be. Look how pompous and kind of like the SUV mentality, you know? Look at how big my car can be. And then something happened, and we started taking it seriously. We started saying, you know what? I do believe in this. Yeah, I'm going to be greedy. I'm going to be... I'm going to stash as much money away as I can and make sure that it doesn't get into the hands of people who deserve it. Not pay any taxes. Not contribute to social programs, express my true feelings about other races and people with other lifestyles. And now you have a lot of people around who simply espouse those views and are unapologetic about it. And more are being bred every day because this kind of thing is being spread around as a valid opinion. So it makes a difference. It makes a difference how these things are perceived and how they are received. So yeah, you can expect more things like that, especially with ignorance being professed on the highest levels with regard to such things. Moving to same people, different country. Some 100 Bahraini Islamists shouting, "God is greatest." Not God is great, God is greatest. These guys are the upper division. They stormed a French restaurant serving alcohol in the pro-Western Gulf Arab state and threatened diners with knives, according to witnesses, also on Thursday. One diner managed to wrestle a knife away from the Islamist and stabbed one with it, causing him severe injuries. They said the assailants, opposed to the consumption of alcohol banned by Islam, also threw Molotov cocktails, which technically is not alcohol, at customers' cars parked outside the restaurant near the capital, Manama. Is that how you say it? Manama? In Bahrain? Or Manama? Which is it? I don't know. And that damaged 9 vehicles late on Wednesday. Around 100 young men shouting, Allahu Akbar, which means God is greatest, came to the restaurant carrying knives and shouted at the customers, why do you drink? That's according to the owner of La Terrasse restaurant. They were acting as if they had the right ideas and people should obey them, he said, adding that there were about 40 customers in the restaurant, including 7 Westerners. Security police investigating the incident declined to comment. Bahrain, headquarters of the U.S. Fifth Fleet and the Gulf's banking hub, has traditionally enjoyed a more liberal atmosphere than some of its more conservative neighbors. It allows restaurants, bars, and nightclubs to serve alcohol, but has recently witnessed a rise in protest against Western-style events deemed immoral by Islamists. Bahraini newspapers reported Thursday that young men had attacked a house in a village where they suspected foreign workers were producing alcohol. Well, you know, it's alcohol there, it's homosexuals here, but you got the same fundamentalist ignorance everywhere. And it's everywhere. It really is. Just look around. You'll see it. We're almost out of time, but I just wanted to spend the last minute paying tribute to someone who really... I heard this news early this morning, and I was kind of surprised at how sad it made me. It wasn't at all surprising, because we even talked about this a couple of weeks ago, and that is the death of Alistair Cook, who died at his home at the age of 95 last night. A couple of weeks ago, he announced that he was retiring from his Letter from America radio show, which ran for 58 years. 58 years, the world's longest-running speech radio program. Alistair Cook joined the BBC as a film critic in 1934 and started writing his U.S. Current Affairs and Historical Letter in 1946. I'd like to know if all these are archived someplace. I'd really like to be able to listen to them, especially back then in that era. The show was listened to by people across Europe, Asia, New Zealand, Africa, the Americas, and the Middle East via the BBC's World Service. Over almost 60 years, his 15-minute reflections touched on everything from the assassinations of the Kennedys to the terrorist attacks of September 11th. As we mentioned, Cook was absent from recent shows due to illness, and this month it was announced he would not record any new shows. But there are archives that have been up for several weeks. I think they should put them all up. The BBC said Cook had decided to sign off following advice from doctors. He had presented 2,869 shows, making up more than 717 hours of broadcasting time. And this figure does not include other radio shows he hosted. And, of course, some of you may remember he was also the host of Alistair Cook's America, which was a PBS series, and the host for Masterpiece Theater, which is where many of us saw him for the first time, back, I guess, in the 70s. According to Radio 4 controller Helen Bowden, millions of listeners over many years have enjoyed Alistair Cook's Letters from America. Many of us charted our lives through them. He was wry, wise, and always insightful. We shall miss him very much. Cook was born in Salford, near Manchester, in 1908, lived with his second wife, Jane White, in New York. In 1973, he received an honorary knighthood for his contribution to Anglo-American understanding, and a year later addressed the United States Congress on his 200th anniversary. And he also had a groundbreaking cultural television show known as Omnibus, which changed the face of U.S. television in the 1950s. So really quite a career. The late Alistair Cook, who died this morning, or late last night in New York. And I don't know, something about, I guess someone who's in radio that you just listen to and can't stop hearing, can't stop sharing their world with them, that I always looked up to, and he was truly one of the greats. That's it for us tonight. We're out of time. We'll be back next week, hopefully raising some funds, and tomorrow night on Off the Hook on WBAI. Until then, have yourselves a good week. Stay educated. and send us email, otw@2600.com. Stay tuned for the blues. Good night.
Hi, this is Albert Collins. When I'm out in Stony Brook, I'll be listening to WUSB FM station. When I want to listen to some good blues, that's the station you tune into.